Hello there! This show contains material which a truly free society would neither fear nor suppress. The language and concepts contained herein will not cause eternal torment in the place where the guy with the horns and pointed stick conducts his business.
Dog. You going to Hollywood, dog?
Hollywood?
We are back.
Yes, we are.
Dog.
These nicknames are killing me.
Well, I'm doing my Randy.
Randy.
What's his name? Randy? Randy Jackson?
Randy Jackson.
Yeah.
Randall K. Jackson.
Randall Q. Jackson. Because we are back in the season of American Idol.
The season of which I do not partake.
I watch the auditions, and that's it.
Can't handle
it. The best part.
I cannot handle the idol.
I don't care about anything about the show. I mean, what is Paula Abdul doing on there? I'm sorry. She had a questionable hit 25 years ago, and she's like an expert on singing. Has anybody heard the descriptions that she gives on that show? What does she know about singing?
She was moved.
Actually, the one person who knows the most is this newest judge, Cara Del Guerrero or something. She's got some crazy name.
I've seen pictures of her.
She's really cute, and she's actually written like 100 top 20 hits. Hello. You know, she's actually got credentials. I mean, I think Simon Cowell's claim to fame is he took two heartthrob British soccer players and had them sing a song, and it sold 1 million copies. Oh, geez.
Yeah, I don't know if Simon's got the credentials, the music credentials. I think he might have the business credentials. You know, he's good at the business part of it, so I don't know.
I mean, Randy Jackson's at least a player, you know? You remember seeing him in Journey? He used to play those pink basses.
I know nothing about those people other than what you tell me.
Yeah, well, I don't. Yeah, once we get past the auditions, which I think tonight is actually the last of the auditions, I'm not going
to
watch it again.
I can't tolerate the auditions because it frightens me to see these people thinking that they're good and then other people telling them that they're not, and then they get upset because they're not.
It's crazy, though, because who could possibly have ever told some of these people that they were good? I mean, their mother, you know? I mean, that's about it. And it's actually kind of sad, you're right.
Oh, darling, you're so good. You got to sing.
It is kind of sad, but, you know, what are they thinking, telling their children that they're good when they don't know the difference between good and bad when it comes to singing?
Sing me a song. Sing me the one with the thing, with the stuff.
What is that? What voice is that?
I don't know.
It's
some I don't know, Jewish grandmother from Brooklyn.
I think it is.
Telling her grandson that.
Do you know Linda Richman?
She's got a beautiful voice. Yes. Not personally.
Man. Total weirdness. Total weirdness.
Speaking of television.
What? Why?
I wanted to mention this.
Ooh.
I'm kind of upset.
I can see that.
I'm just vibrating with anger. No, the Discovery Channel's been putting these ads out for this new television show called No Way Out or One Way Out. One Way Out. No Way Out's the thing with, what's his name? You know what I'm talking about?
I know the show that you're talking about, but I don't know the show that you're thinking of now.
No, it was a movie. It was No Way Out, Field of Dreams guy.
Kevin Kline?
Kevin Costner.
Kevin Kline?
Different guy.
Tracy Ullman?
No. Anyways, One Way Out, it's with this guy, Jonathan Goodwin. The ads looked intriguing because it seemed like it was going to be this show about kind of like the science of escaping and everything. As it turns out, I watched the first two episodes, and I don't want to, you know, spoil anything for you, but I'm going to tell you everything that was in them.
Yeah.
It was essentially Jackass, you know, the MTV show.
Which I avoid.
With a guy slightly more literate than the guys on Jackass and explaining things as he did them. And through the entire show, I kept thinking, why is this on Discovery Channel? Why is this on Discovery Channel? I thought Discovery Channel was supposed to be, you know, increasing our knowledge about science and nature and not just showing stunts for the sake of stunts. And this is what it seemed to be. And it seemed like there was like a thin patina, a veneer of science that they were somewhat talking about.
A veneer of credibility.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you one stunt that the guy did. And from then on, I'm thinking, why can't I turn the channel? That was the other problem. He wanted to escape without moving. He wanted to escape with as little movement as possible.
Like telekinetic escape?
No.
He wanted to get beamed out? What's going on?
He wanted to move, but he wanted to escape with as little movement as possible. So there's his premise. So he wanted to escape without like having to twist or, you know, dislocate his shoulders or anything like that. So he takes this table, you know, kind of like what we're sitting at, and he drills four holes in it. And then he puts his wrist down and this quote-unquote, I'm doing the air quotes, his friend, who's the cameraman, takes these zip ties. I'll tell you something that he did, and you'll say this guy cannot be his friend. He puts some zip ties around his arm, so his arms are zip tied down to the table.
Which are standard police handcuffs these days.
Right, and they mentioned zip ties. Maybe that was the science part. They said the police use these.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that I got the vibe that it was supposed to be scientific. I thought he was going to show us escapes, you know? But
right.
And I haven't seen it yet.
And I thought that it was going to be like an interesting description of the escapes and how he does things, but it was mainly watch me as I abuse my body. So he holds his arms down. All he can do is barely move his arms. Then he says to motivate himself, again, the air quotes, motivate himself to not move so much, his friend takes this giant emperor scorpion and puts it in his mouth.
And tapes it closed?
And tapes it closed.
Well, they show that in the commercial.
Right. I mean, that in and of itself, frightening. And they make a point. Here's another science bit. If it stings me, I will not die, but it's very painful. And its pincers can draw blood. Okay.
Well, yeah.
Okay. So we know, stay away from scorpions. I didn't learn anything new. So he puts the thing in his mouth, tapes it. And after like three or four tries of him trying to get it in his mouth and the scorpion saying, I don't want to go in your mouth. I'm going to bite the side of your face. They got it in his mouth, taped it closed. And then the cameraman's taping and he's squirming out. He's moving very little. He's pulling his arms out of the zip ties. And then his cameraman friend, again, the air quotes, starts slapping him on the face. And this is right out of Jackass. Starts slapping him on the face so that he pisses off the scorpion. This is on Discovery Channel.
Yeah.
So the guy gets stung inside of his mouth.
Did he?
Yes.
He did?
He said, he goes, as soon as, and it's like the voiceover, kind of like Bear Grylls. You know how Bear Grylls says, and I tasted it and it was god awful. Well,
Bear Grylls, who now is, has made it since he's doing a cereal commercial.
Right. I've just gone from eating a live eel at the innards of a bloated calf, and now I'm eating granola. So anyways, the guy slaps him in the face, and he says, as soon as he started doing that, I felt, bam, bam, two stings right to the roof of my mouth.
Imagine that.
Okay, again, why is this on Discovery Channel? Can you answer that for me? I need an answer.
I can't.
In writing, in triplicate.
I can't. But that reminds me of a movie I saw. It was about a mercenary type guy, and I forget what it was called.
A Force of One.
I forget who was the lead actor.
The Guns of Navarone.
Do not make me mad. What was that line in Pulp Fiction? He goes, he was getting real pissed off, and he goes, I am the Guns of Navarone.
I don't know, but there are so many lines. I think every line in that movie is a quotable line.
Well, I saw this movie years ago, and this mercenary guy had his house broken into, and he captured the guy. You know, the guy came in to kill him. But he ended up, like, capturing the guy, the hitman.
Do you know who was in the movie?
I'm trying to remember. I don't.
Kevin Costner? No Way Out?
I don't know, but there was a scene where when he wanted to get questions answered from this guy who came in to kill him, he took, like, a glass. You're good at this. He took a glass and he smashed it, so there were lots of shards, and he put all the shards in the guy's mouth, and he taped his mouth closed, and he started punching him in the face to try to get answers out of him.
Could have used a scorpion.
The scorpion might have been as good a solution for that, yeah.
I mean, how do you think of that? I mean, you're sitting around going, what would be really nasty to put inside my mouth other than my own feces? I mean, a scorpion.
Somebody else's feces might be a little more disgusting than your own.
I don't know.
You know, I think in our efforts to become less like frat boys, we're becoming more like frat boys since we're thinking about it.
Well, I'm thinking screw them.
Because when I listen to the
show, screw them and the horse they rode in on. And when I say them, I mean the people who were called us frat boys.
Well, it's a him.
Well, I don't know. We haven't confirmed the sex.
Because when I think it was a guy, when I listen to our shows, It's almost like we go there on purpose sometimes now when I edit them and I listen to them, you know? So it's, I think in our efforts to become less like frat boys, we may
it's
be.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It is. Yeah, it is. I don't know.
All right. What are we going to talk about now?
I don't know. What are we drinking?
Let's talk about the wine.
Yes.
Frat boys don't drink wine unless it's out of a box.
There's a lot of truth to that.
Which actually, you can probably find some good wines in a box. This is.
You mean the crate of 12. By box, you mean the wooden crate that the 12 good bottles come in, right?
Yeah, that crate. This is something that I just picked up tonight on the way here. It's called Three Blind Moose. It's Cabernet. It is from California, 2006. I like it quite a bit. It's very schmoove. This is one of those wines that doesn't hit you right over the head. You could drink it all night long.
Yeah, it's subtle. It's a subtle cab.
You have to be a blind moose to enjoy it.
Well, next week or next time we open a bottle, I have a Malbec that's very peppery and it's very big. It's very bold.
Now take that, you frat boy loving.
It's over there actually. It's in that wine
yeah,
rack.
Yeah, we'll finish that up tonight.
So what, you want to jump into a tune?
But let's play quarters while we're listening to the music.
Okay.
Beer pong maybe?
That would imply I had a few quarters and I don't.
We need a pole dancer or a table dancer while we're doing.
I was thinking about putting one of those in here.
A pole?
Yeah.
Well, there's one already.
I know. We had two once.
That's way too many for one room.
I know. You going to play a tune?
Here it is.
All right.
He's back on his high horse again, riding home to Texas. He's doing the best he can, so let's give that boy a hand. He's back on his high horse again. Well, I'm humbled as a weary nation, sets aside its reservations, lifts its voices to the sky to bid that boy goodbye. And those of us who loved him best know that he has earned his rest. Now it's time to perk his boots and grab a weed to chaw. He's back on his high horse again, riding home to Texas. He done the best he can, so let's give that boy a hand. He's back on his high horse again. Well, people shouting awful loud, almost like an angry crowd, making gestures, wagging signs, and showing him the door. Now hold on, folks, don't crowd him so. Junior knows it's time to go. It ain't no need to point, that's what them exit signs is for. He's back on his high horse again, riding home to Texas. He's done the best he can, so let's give that boy a hand. He's back on his high horse again. Suffering through the end of times, we'll just say that he's some kind of rapture superman. He won't go away from here, Jesus made him disappear. Big old long time before you see his like again. He's back on his high horse again.
That's what I said.
Riding home to Texas. He's done the best he can. He's a rapture superman. He's back on his high horse again.
Hang up, boys, it's closing.
Yeah.
Y'all don't want to be left behind.
He's back on his high horse again.
I know you're 2109.
He's back on his high horse again.
That is their way of saying, see you later. Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out.
I saw on this website, it's called Pundit Kitchen, where they, and I was showing Rich some of these pictures, where they basically just have an RSS feed filled with pictures with funny captions about, you know, news stories and political stuff. And there's this picture of George Bush, and he's in front of a podium, and there's basically nothing behind him. And it says the four best words in the English language, former President George Bush.
Yeah, and it wasn't made completely clear and obvious in that song, but Back on His High Horse was their ode to Mr. Bush leaving office and going home to Texas.
The decider.
The decidificator.
He's not a unatificationator. He's a deciderator. Decidifier.
I know now, like the, all the comedy writers on the TV shows have been pointing out, now they got to actually work again. They got to come up with like ideas and write.
They're like, how do you make fun of a guy who's well-spoken and very articulate.
Done more in one day than Bush did in the last year.
Yeah, I think I mentioned it before where they – maybe I didn't. Maybe they didn't talk to you about it or even on the show where they put the website up like
what
immediately,
website?
The new White
Obama
House,
website,
whitehouse.gov.
Yeah. And there was some digs to Bush on there too.
Yeah, there was. I think it was his statement about, you know, undoing a lot of the horrible policies of the last.
Didn't I email
years.
You about that?
Maybe.
I think I sent you the email about that.
I've talked to a lot of people about this, obviously, in the past week. But one of the cool things is someone who's like more techie looked at the stuff on the website. One of the things that they did on the website was immediately remove what's called the robots.txt file.
Right.
You familiar with that file?
I know a little bit about it.
For all you non-techie people, what that is, it's a file that contains a list of files or directories or web pages on a website that you don't want automated indexing services to look at.
Google bots.
Specifically Google. I mean, Google is the primary, but you have Google, Yahoo.
Yahoo.
Who else is there?
Taoma, MSN Search.
MSN, that's the one that was thinking.
There's still a lot of them out there.
Yeah.
Jeeves.
So these search engines, what they'll do is they'll crawl the site looking at link and go from link to link to link, and they'll look at the content on the site, and they'll pull it down and index it. So when people go onto Google, they're not actually going onto the internet looking for stuff. It's Google's got a database filled with things that it had seen previously. So a robots.txt file says, don't go in here. Don't look at this stuff. We don't want you indexing this stuff. We don't want people searching on this stuff. Well, the first thing that the Obama administration did was take that down and made it completely clear. So anything on the website is for public consumption. And you know how many files that were omitted from the searching?
I don't.
Thousands. Thousands and thousands of pages.
That's not that many, really, at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Well, there's billions, there's trillions of pages on the internet now.
In fact, it wasn't thousands. It was thousands of entries in the robots.txt file, which means one directory could have been 1,000 pages in and of itself.
It could have been one page.
Right. Well, I've never been to the whitehouse.gov until the new president.
I don't go there much either.
But it just says a lot. I think they're doing a lot about transparency. And again, another thing that happened, you see the Google, did you see the whole thing about the Google Maps or Google Earth?
No.
Through the entire Bush administration, the Naval Observatory where the vice president lived, they pixelated that so you couldn't see the satellite image. Again, they undid that. Now you
have
see
you seen that?
Yep.
It's like on Wisconsin Ave.
Now if from the satellite image in Google Maps, you can see it and it's perfectly clear just like everything else. Because
friend,
you know what?
We own it. My friend Matt lives two blocks from there.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, in Georgetown, just down Wisconsin Ave. He lives right next to the Russian
G-town,
the
yo.
Russian embassy, actually.
That's cool.
Right in the building right next door. He could spy.
I used to work in one of the offices, not this job, not the job before this, but the one before that when I was down in D.C. I used to work in the same building as the South African embassy.
Really?
Yep.
So you're a what was that stuff called?
I don't know if
that
it was
we didn't
the,
like.
I don't know if it was the full embassy office, but it was a satellite office.
So you're an apartheidist?
Just because I worked in the same building doesn't mean I necessarily
you condone apartheid.
Condone apartheid, however you want to pronounce
Made
it.
Made in America by American.
You are Mr. Segway.
Yeah, that's me. Segui.
So how about them Mets?
Talking to Pedro Martinez right now. I don't know why. I'd bring him into middle relief and nothing more, but.
Ah. So anyways, yeah, Made in America. You brought it up. What was the whole thing we were talking about that sort of got me spurred on that?
Was it the SRAM, the SRAM components?
Yes. Talk about that.
Well, not that anybody's going to care.
No, but it's a good starting point.
But the American bike maker, Trek.
Not Star Trek.
The maker of the bikes on which Lance Armstrong won 7 Tours de France, they used to use Shimano components. And this year on their website, I noticed they're using SRAM, which is an American component manufacturer. Not that this is big news, but I just sent John the link to it. So, you know, Lance is riding for Astana, and they're outfitted with, because they're, Johan Bruneel's teams apparently get Trek bikes and nothing more, regardless of what country the team is based in. So anyway, they're riding Trek bikes, and they're riding with SRAM components. And that inspired John to I forgot spout what you off. Spout off about something, and I don't quite exactly remember what you had said. And
I'll try to
go me, it's
kind of
cool. And I, by the way, when SRAM started making high-end components, I thought to myself, why doesn't Trek use SRAM? It makes all the sense in the world.
And why does it make all the sense in the world?
American bikes, American components. That's the only reason. I mean, I can't give you a big dissertation on it, but, you know, American bike manufacturer, they were using Shimano, which was a Japanese component manufacturer. And then the other big one is Campagnolo, which is Italian, and it's my preference. But yeah, so
and
Trek
it should
bikes,
be everyone's preference.
Exactly. Trek Bikes is using SRAM components now. Great. And they make the highest tech, lightest weight, high-end component group in the world right now. You know, it's probably the best group, and it's American-made, which is pretty unheard of because it used to be Campagnolo that was generally regarded as the best. But this got John talking about – I don't remember what you said,
well,
so
let me
run with it.
The thing is, when you said that, it kind of reminded me of a lot of the arguments, and this isn't a reflection on you. A lot of the arguments that I've
had – We don't even have a mirror in here.
With a lot of – you don't show up in mirrors. There's a lot of people that I've had this argument with.
It's only the mirrors above my bed I don't show up in, actually.
No one else shows up.
That's right. It's just me. It's just me that shows up in those. That's the sad part.
It was just low-hanging fruit, Rich. I had to go for it.
Like the mirror. Yes.
And you have fruit up there. So anyways, I have this argument with a lot of people. And the argument is, oh, yeah, people should buy American. And I'm not the one proposing that people should buy American. Because I think the whole prospect of buying American kind of is a it's a fiction. It's a fallacy. It's a myth. And not that the whole bike thing wouldn't make sense. If it was – I think it would make sense kind of like in the Olympic teams. The Olympic teams, they're representing a country. It's about national pride as much as it is about, you know, physical prowess. You've got the American team riding an American bike with American components. That would make sense to me. But in terms of pure sport, you've got teams with riders from all over the place. It's not just American riders on one team. It doesn't matter if they're riding an American frame with Japanese components, with a Spaniard on the seat, with Corinthian leather on his butt, you know, all sorts of stuff like that. I just think that this whole concept of national unity within products is silly. And here's my example that I throw out to you. People always talk about, yeah, buy American cars, and there's this concept of an American auto industry, and I think that the American auto industry, it's another one of those things that we perpetuate, and we talk about we need to prop the American auto industry up. Well, who are we really propping up? You look at Chrysler, you look at Ford, you look at GM. All of these companies produce vehicles that are hodgepodge parts coming from all over the world.
And they're all owned or own other companies.
Exactly.
Right? Ford and Mazda. Chrysler, formerly Benz, Lamborghini.
Bugatti. Volkswagen. I'm sorry, Bugatti is part of Volkswagen. So.
And then we had Fiat owns Ferrari. And I mean, those are both Italian. But
a lot of them have some investments in everyone else, too.
You know, absolutely.
You have like multiple car companies owning single little pieces of another car company. I mean, Chrysler used to be owned by Benz or Mercedes. It used to be
Daimler.
It was Daimler, Chrysler. And then Daimler sold off their controlling interest, but they still own a big chunk of them, you know? So all these little bits and pieces floating around. But then in the products themselves, you've got, for one example, you know, people say, yeah, buy American, buy American. Well, the Toyota Camry, lots of those cars are built in the United States.
That's right. And to me, that's great. And this is the slant I've always had on it. I remember having a discussion with a guy 15, 20 years ago, and he kept talking about, I don't care where the cars are made as long as the profits stay in the U.S.
Sure.
No. How about what matters to me is where the cars are manufactured. Let's put Americans to work. I applaud Toyota for opening up plants here, and I would buy their car because they're employing American workers. I don't care where the freaking profits stay. Like the billionaire who has a ton of stock in GM or Ford or Chrysler, he's probably spending most of his time in a villa in Europe, and he's spending right. The money over there. He's not helping the American economy. you know, I don't care who the chief shareholders are or who any of the shareholders are.
I don't even care if the products even stay in the United States. I don't care if we're producing Toyota Camrys, building them in the United States and shipping them back to Japan. Yeah. I really don't care.
I mean, to me, I'm going to reward the company that treats their employees well. And I guess it's because I'm an old school socialist. But I mean, I'm going to reward the companies that treat their employees well and that choose to manufacture in the United States. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of the big three have chosen to manufacture in Mexico and Brazil, and a lot of the European and Japanese companies are now building plants in the U.S. I mean, in some ways, we're their Mexico. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
American companies are sending production to Mexico, and German companies are sending production to the United States because the cost of doing production here is a little less. And, you know, but I mean, at the end of the day, I guess I'd rather see them provide jobs for German laborers,
right?
But you know, I'm going to reward companies that build products in the United States. You know, my dad in the 70s always used the word foreign car to describe imports. Well, you're not going to get one of them foreign cars, are you? Well, why not? They put your friend to work over there in whatever state, and they're providing him with a job and health care. I want to make sure that he continues to have a job, a living wage job,
right,
that provides health care and food for him and his family. Why should I buy a X brand that's being made in Mexico?
Well, and think about it. If let's say that the profits are all funneled to GM when you're purchasing GM cars, no matter where they're manufactured, no matter where they're sold, all that kind of thing. It's the same thing with every manufacturer. You know, the profits are going to trickle up towards the company owner.
Trickle up economics.
Really, that's what it ended up being. So if you've got a corporation centered in the United States, where is all of the money going with a corporation that's really not making much of a profit, especially like GM? Most of the money is going towards the workers, right?
I don't know what you mean.
Well, any large corporation, the largest line item on their books is the employees.
Well, and they're also claiming that healthcare and all of these things are the biggest line item. I think they've been lying to us about that. I'm not entirely sure that's true.
Well, let's take even automotive manufacturers out of it. In general, I think it's a decent and fair generalization to say that most corporations, one of the largest line items, if not the largest line items, is payroll.
Well, fine. You're employing people. Great.
Right.
How cool is that?
So what I'm
saying, employing people. Something to be proud of.
So that's what I'm saying. You're employing people. Okay. You're employing people.
And it shouldn't be thought of as a line item. They're an asset. They're not a freaking line item. They're an asset.
That's not where I'm going with this. What I'm saying is the corporations, when they're employing people in the United States, they're putting a lot of money back in the United States because that money stays in the United States and buys things in the United States, and it helps other corporations stay in the United States.
Because most employees don't have the villa in Europe.
Right.
Most
of their employees. They don't telecommute
from
Spain.
They're actually spending their money in the United States.
Right. But let's take the rest of the line items that they're spending and making. Where is this money coming from? It's coming from all their other ventures, like the manufacturing plant in Mexico, their sales overseas. I mean, why is it that we have to support this company when they're not staying within the United States? They're diversifying. They're doing what good companies do.
Or bad companies.
Yeah. And you know, again, I go back to this whole thing, people thinking that there is such a thing as an American car and an American car company. It's just plain false.
Ford used to run an ad, World Car, Ford Escort. Remember that?
Yeah.
You know, it had parts from all over the world. And if I'm not mistaken, in the 70s, Renault ran that ad too with the Fuego. They used to brag.
It's on Fuego.
Yeah. They used to brag about how the Fuego had parts from all, you know, manufacturers all over the world. But anyway, Ford, in the 80s, I think it was, started running those ads. Ford Escort, the World Car. You know, it's manufactured all over. Yeah, the idea. And Noam Chomsky talks about this all the time. The idea that there is an actual American corporation is ridiculous. They have offices all over the world. They're very diversified. Yes, there are corporations that are only U.S., you know. I mean, absolutely, there are smaller corporations. But I suppose when you get to the size of a conglomerate or a behemoth corporation like a GM or a Ford or a Chrysler or a Microsoft or a whatever,
mm-hmm.
you're certainly diversified. You're all over the world. I mean, the idea that Microsoft is an American corporation is
just
absurd.
It's just they have a sentimental home.
Bill Gates lives in America. That's what that means. You know, yeah. His main home, anyway, is in Redmond or yeah, Seattle or something.
There's some sort of sentimental connection between Bill Gates and Microsoft and Seattle in Redmond.
In other words, that's where the company started.
Yeah, but it's not where it exists.
You know, 30 years ago or more.
Of course. Well, of course, their largest campus is in Redmond. But
and you've been there.
I've been there a couple of times.
Have you hung with Bill?
I have not.
You didn't get drunk with Bill and Linda? Melinda?
No, that's like saying, you went to New York, you hung with Bloomberg? No.
I did. I hung with Koch.
Okay,
Ed
maybe
Koch.
Maybe that was a bad example. But one thing I wanted to mention about this is I have this book. It's called The Story of the Mini or something, The Mini Story.
About the Mini Cooper?
Yeah. When
John had one, by the way, and he crashed it.
I did, and I'll explain that in another show.
I'm well aware of the crash.
I didn't total it. It was just a little ding.
It was a little ding. Okay. It's a tiny little ding.
So I bought a Mini Cooper the year that they came out, the redesign.
Was that the time you needed facial reconstructive surgery, actually, that little ding, if I'm not mistaken? John actually doesn't look like John anymore. The guy I knew 20 years ago, the guy sitting across the table from me now looks a little more like, I don't know, let me think. I'm trying to think of a famous person that John looks like now. He used to look like John Tallarico. Now he looks a little bit more like Ron Greshner, former forward for the New York Rangers.
That reference is lost on me.
So are you excited about the new Joe Torre book?
Let me get to my story. We'll talk about Joe Torre tomorrow. So this book, right, when I got the Mini because I fell in love with the car.
What color was it?
Silver.
Did it have a British flag on top?
No, but it had racing stripes. I had
a
racing
rally
stripes
strip
on the hood. Yep.
It was an automatic, wasn't it?
It was not. It was
supercharged?
Six speed supercharged.
You got the supercharged one?
Of course I did.
You got balls, man.
It was cool. It was like a go-kart.
Until you crashed it.
Well, you know, again, another story. So I thought, let me read some more about this. And the story was fascinating. But the thing is, as I was reading it, I'm thinking, this cannot be atypical. It was the story about how the Mini came
atypical
to be.
Atypical what?
An atypical story about how a car came to be. The car was originally a British car, okay? BMW bought the company through some group acquisition of Rover and Mini and all these other things. They wanted to build this, or they actually, I think they did build. They built this huge entire production facility. They wanted to build them in England. And then they needed to have some design department come up with an engine that could fit in the compartment. They had people in Germany designing the look of the car. They actually contracted people in the Chrysler. It wasn't even part of the company. This is BMW hiring Chrysler designers to design the engine. And the design went down to Brazil because they had a manufacturing plant that did a better job there. They got parts of the electronics from Italy. They actually shipped them all towards the UK, assemble it in the UK, ship it to the US. You know, this is not a German car. This is not a British car. This is not a Brazilian car. It's not an American car. And this is stuff that's going on with every single car that we own. You know, Pontiac, I mentioned this to Rich, Pontiac Vibe is a Toyota with new skin in the US. I don't even know where they put it together. So I'm
actually, that's built on the moon.
Actually, it's built on Uranus.
Speaking of the moon.
And it's
frat boys.
Well, there you go. So it's just that's a huge pet peeve.
If we have a pet peeve show, we ought to do that. There's a concept.
That's my pet peeve. People thinking that, you know, buy American or buy German or buy Japanese or buy I don't know.
Buy golly.
Is golly a place? Buy Sri Lankan. That's what we should do.
Isn't that Ceylon?
I don't know.
No, it used to be
called
Ceylon. That's
there you
right.
go.
What was the former name of Zimbabwe?
Rhodesia.
Yes, good call.
Ding, ding, ding. All right, so I'm done ranting.
Well, and again, I mean, I just like to reiterate, you know, this again, the idea that there's a truly single nation corporation that's as big as these companies is absurd. But again, my money goes to the people who treat their employees well, employ Americans, and only because I am an American. I mean, you know, I love that, you know, BMW and Mercedes do manufacture a few things here. It would be cooler if they kind of, you know, employed their own people. Lord knows the economy, you know, when the U.S. economy tanked, everybody's economy tanked because we're seen as world leaders for whatever reason that is, I don't know.
Because we're the largest consumer of goods and services.
Yeah, that's right. We don't export that much, but we import an awful lot. God damn it. God bless America. That's all I have to say.
We eat a lot. We poop a lot. We flush a lot.
We gain a lot of weight. Yep. You know? I don't know.
I'll speak for yourself.
Well, it's true. In my case, it's definitely true.
All right. Well, we'll talk about Joe Torre some other time. Maybe next week.
We could. We had to get him on the show. Joe Torre? Can you imagine Joe Torre on the show? How cool would that be?
We would have to have him bring his sponsor along,
and,
too.
And, but what's cool, about having Joe Torre on the show is that we both like him, despite the fact that he's a former Yankee manager. He's a former Met manager, and he was not just a manager for the Mets. He was a player manager.
He actually played
for the New York Metskies.
Don't hate the player.
I don't. I'm a Joe Torre fan, especially since he got the shaft from the Yankees and he wrote this tell-all book just tearing him up, up the Steinbrenners.
I read the article about that whole meeting.
He's going to be on Larry King Friday night.
Is he?
Yes. Larry King Live.
That'll be fun.
You're watching CNN.
Joe Torre, what do you think about olive drab? Olive drab is my favorite color.
Olive drab with pinstripes. We got a tune?
Yeah, we do.
All right, let's check it out.
All talk that lies are warnings, the panic's out and on a road. This place is loaded. Drags a glass paned open door, and in your mind there's nothing wrong. In your mind it's so long. For the blessed slow, but faster it will go. A second try
ethereal.
Ethereal.
That too.
Yeah, that was David Cloyd with Never Run. Something I picked up on PodSafe Music Network.
I don't know if we mentioned the name of the band that did the first track.
We didn't.
That was a band called Big Green. They're actually a local band. I think it's big-green.net or biggreen.net. They're actually friends of mine, and it's funny because they're named Matt and Joe Perry, which is sort of funny because, of course, Matthew Perry from Friends, and Joe Perry's the guitarist in Aerosmith.
Different Matt and Joe Perry.
They are, but they have a band.
And one of them is on a different television show, and the other one plays for a different band.
Something. You confused me. But they do a lot of political humor in their music and a lot of, you know, things like that. They have a message and they're a lot of fun, you know?
That's cool. Well, yeah, yeah. I don't know, a couple of days ago, I started looking for some PodSafe music, and I found some more. We'll be playing some more of that, and it's...
I have two Big Green CDs just sitting downstairs. The track...
It's all approved?
Oh, it's totally approved, yeah. The track that we played, which was called High Horse, he's back on his high... that can actually be downloaded from their website. So that there was one of the tunes they're giving away. I downloaded that, but then he sent me in the mail, even though he lives like, you know, a mile from me. He sent me in the mail... Whoops, they're two CDs. I didn't break it, though. That was my martini glass that I'm drinking wine out of. Let's see if we can knock an Australian down. Wait.
It's a gross misuse of fine china.
That's one Aussie down.
Every time a glass dings, an Aussie falls off a forklift.
You know, it's at this point that I normally talk about a movie.
So what's up with that?
Well, I have seen a couple of movies at Munson. But I wasn't exactly enthralled with them, and, you know, I don't think I want to talk about them.
And we're going to keep with the theme of if you don't have anything good to say, well, then
yeah, 'cause
you don't deserve a podcast.
If a movie's something that's not to my liking, actually, if the movie's not to my liking but there was something interesting about it, I'll talk about it, and I'll just say, you know, it's probably one I wouldn't have paid for or whatever. You know, it's nothing I'd see again. If it's a movie that I really like, I usually would be willing to see it again. And even though Catherine Deneuve... The First Lady of French Cinema was in the last film. I mean, I could look at her for hours, but, you know, the movie
That's
was...
That's what pauses for.
Looking at Catherine Deneuve. Right. Yeah, okay, that's true. I'll buy that. But anyway, yeah, so I have no movie to talk about. I mean, I've certainly seen a lot of films lately. There's nothing I can think of to talk about. Actually, I would like to mention the fact that Man on Wire,
yeah,
not going to be released on Blu-ray in the U.S.
Still not. I think we talked about that before.
Did I mention it on the show? I thought, I'm a little upset about it.
Apparently.
That was going to be one of my first Blu-ray purchases, you know, Man on Wire.
You know what I was wondering what would be coming out on Blu-ray?
What's that?
Man on Wire?
Yeah.
And the answer is still no.
Well, I emailed them and said, literally, quote, are you mad, end quote. I mean, do you people not want to sell movies?
And they said, no, we're quite happy. We're not angry.
They didn't reply at all. Magnolia Pictures. Yeah, email Magnolia Pictures. Go to their website and ask them when Man on Wire. I mean, I'm using the power of the pulpit right here. Go and email Magnolia Pictures. Go to their website, whatever it is, and find an email address. And it might be something like dvd@magnoliapictures.com. I forgot what it was. But ask them when the freak Man on Wire is coming out on Blu-ray. I didn't buy a Blu-ray player so that I wouldn't be able to watch movies. That's all I have to say.
Of course, How many negatives were in there?
I didn't buy a Blu-ray player at all. It was a gift. But nonetheless, okay. I have one.
I was completely lost by that quadruple negative sentence.
It's just, you know, subtract all the negatives, multiply, and you get an indifferent.
You need to do a derivative to actually get the positives out of that.
I'm confused. I don't know. Hey, what's
we've been yanked.
Not for me in a while, I'll tell you that. Holy cow, I got to get me a girlfriend. Wait a minute. Again with
We're
the
still
frat
on the
boys.
Air, Rich.
Oh, sorry.
That thing is on. You see, that's the pause button that you didn't hit.
Which is probably good.
Right.
Anyway, this is Rich Wilgus.
And I am John Tallarico.
And you've been listening to another episode of Bloodthirsty Vegetarians, which is better than the one we did last time when the Mac crashed.
Yeah, there's a lot of frustration involved.
But we found a workaround, which we had then, but we didn't know.
We won't bore you.
That's right.
Anymore.
Check us out on the web, www.bloodyveg.com.
Hey, feel free to hit our forum.
Please.
But I won't.
BloodyVeg.com/forum.
Send us email, too.
Feedback @BloodyVeg. You've been listening to the VIB.